Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. This is a soundcheck session from our archives. Those archives go back 20 years, but this session is slightly more recent. It's from 2018.
When I'm asleep, I'm dreaming about it. When I'm awake, I take no rest. Must I cross this wild ocean to see the one that I love best?
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from newsounds.org. I'm John Schaefer. The music critic and writer Greil Marcus famously coined the term Old Weird America to describe the country that we meet in a lot of really old folk songs. Well, for the past 6 or 7 years, Anna and Elizabeth have been mining that deep motherlode of folk weirdness. Their latest album is called The Invisible Comes to Us, and it is full of these old weird American folk songs given a new sound. They are here with us in the studio today to play some of them. This first song is called Juneau.
And we'd like to introduce, we have a special guest singer with us today named Margaret Shipman. She comes from Lee, Massachusetts, and she comes from 1943.
Reel item number 2 is side B of this disc. This is Juneau and Jeanette and fragments of The Quaker's Wooing, The Old Maid Song, and Outlandish Night, sung by Margaret Shipman.
Far away, far away from poor Jeanette. There's no one left to love me now, and you too may forget. But my heart, it will be with you wherever you may go. Can you look me in the face and say the same, Juneau? When you wear the jacket red and the beautiful cockade, oh, I fear you will forget all the promises you've made. With the gun upon your shoulder and the saber by your side, you'll be taking some fine lady and be making her your bride. Oh, if I were King of France, or still better, Pope of Rome, I'd have no fighting men abroad, no weeping maids at home. All the right should be the might, all the world should be at peace, and the right should be the might. I'd have those that made the quarreling the only ones to fight.
I'm going far away from poor Jeanette. There's no one left to love me now, and you too may forget. But my heart will be with you wherever you may go. Can you look me in the face and say the same? Still better Pope of Rome. I'd have no fighting men abroad, nor weeping maids at home. All the world should be at peace, and the right should be the might. I'd have those that made the quarreling the only ones to fight.
That is called Janot, old folk song in a new arrangement by Anna and Elizabeth and Margaret.
Yes.
Anna Roberts-Gevalt singing and playing the guitar, Elizabeth Leprell singing, and joining them today, Jarrett Gilgore on keyboards. You'll hear him playing sax in a little bit as well. Anna, Elizabeth, a real pleasure to have the two of
it's
you
so
here.
Great.
Thank you so much.
So on the record,
yeah,
the last track is called Margaret, and
yeah,
it is that recording
that
you just
recording
played for us.
Yeah.
So the album is kind of a
little cycle.
Yeah, it's a circle. It's a Ouroboros, the dragon that eats its own tail.
Yeah.
It circles back.
Yeah.
This album is full of songs that even people who are kind of cognizant of folk
yeah
music are like, where did this come from?
Right.
Mission accomplished.
Yes. We kind of about 2.5 years ago, it was time to think about the next record. And we really wanted to make a record of folk songs from the two places where we grew up. So I grew up in Vermont. Elizabeth grew up in Virginia. And I had long known about this archive in Middlebury, Vermont, where this woman, Helen Harkness Flanders, made 4,066 recordings in the 1940s of New Englanders throughout rural Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont mostly. And I felt like it was for sure time for me to do my homework. You know, I was going around singing all this music from all these singers that, you know, we had gotten to know the families of a lot of the singers that we were singing from, but just really feeling like, yeah, there are these old weird folk songs from every part of this country. And it would be amazing to be able to play like the music of New England as well.
Yeah.
And also just being really curious, like, what are the songs? What, you know, and the archive was so accessible. Like, they were like, barely no one comes here. And so I went up for a month, and Elizabeth spent a month going around Virginia archives. And we're lucky we got these two residencies, one at the McDowell Colony, where we could just kind of say, look what I found. And we had all these like scanned documents and recordings. And then we made these giant maps on our studio walls saying, this is from this part of Vermont and this part of New Hampshire and this part of Virginia. And we kind of exploded our research together in a studio, an art studio for a month to kind of start to sift through the songs to figure out which ones to record.
So it sounds like you really were looking for things. Everybody. Folk fans love their John Hardys and their Pretty Pollys and their Pretty Sarahs, and those are all great songs.
Yeah. Totally, we love those songs.
But
it's a special feeling to be like, oh my God, I've never heard this before, and no one else has that I know either. Because bringing something new in the folk world can be kind of rare.
Yeah.
And that's part of the beauty of it is interpreting something that is familiar to some, but
And I think just philosophically, that idea of like, sometimes it seems like, you know, when you meet our audiences, there's this very vague sense of what folk music is like. Oh, folk music, it's from the past or from over there.
Or even worse, it's from the 60s.
Right. And I think for us, it's always been using the idea of micro history, like this idea of like, oh, we're going to find this specific song from this specific person and figure out how to kind of hit home the idea of how specific these people were get inspired by those specifics. Like, what did they sound like? Where did they live? What is this specific version of this song that I hadn't heard before? And kind of through getting really narrowing down into those specifics, I feel like that's really helped us as musicians to kind of focus on our idea of what the sound is rather than a kind of general broad idea of like it's folk.
Right. And it helps us talking about the music as well. I think, especially when we were beginning and doing mostly music from my neck of the woods, which is Appalachia, the broad idea of Appalachia is kind of like, oh, I've seen Deliverance or something. Right. And talking about these very specific singers and their specific songs and what physical specific things we can learn about their lives helps kind of give a way clearer picture than a vague idea of an area or mm-hmm. a people, you know?
Yeah, or a sound, really.
Yeah. Well, it's so important to, these days when, you know, somebody discovers the last person of their tribe in the jungles of northern India, what is the first thing they do? They stick a microphone in front of that person and they collect every song they can get because you get so much of that culture before, I mean, this is not, unfortunately, an example that I'm just making up.
Yeah,
this actually happens.
Right.
And, you know, having this Margaret, what's her last name?
Margaret Shipman.
You know, having that tape of her is a real document of more than just one lady in some little town in New England. There's like a whole culture around that.
Yeah. And I think also it's just having the experience where you have to go to the archive and spending that month listening to a lot of white noise. That gave us a lot of the ideas for this record. And listening to the white noise and feeling bored sometimes and feeling like when I was in the archive, I just discovered Paulina Oliveros also. And so I was kind of doing
late great American composer.
Exactly.
Of deep listening.
Yes. Well, I did a bunch of deep listening in the archive, this idea of like, what does it mean that I'm sitting here for a whole month and I'm trying to input all these old sounds, like what's actually in them and how do I be a better listener of them? And for the New England ones, there was a few, I got to go to the houses where the recordings were made and having that kind of the road trip and seeing the landscape and sitting in the abandoned house where the Ripest of Apple song was recorded. And we both have this urge to have it be an experience, to have it be this, our own journey as people with the songs and then figuring out how do you input that into art? Because it kind of became stressful when it came time for the record, because then we had all these experiences and we're like, how do you put it into one sound? Because it did feel like
clearly the answer is you don't put it into one sound. Right. Because this album is all, I mean, By the Shore, your arrangement of the song By the Shore is basically sound art.
I'll sing you a song. It goes, Tar and I, the shore watching the ships pass. The dark and a sparkling pretty name. I'll sing you a song watching the ships pass.
You take a little boat as she has done before.
Watching the ships pass. I desire that maid who walks alone by the shore.
And there's also a version of Farewell to Erin, which sounds almost like somebody's been listening to Indian classical music.
Interesting.
You know, it's got the drone and the kind of modal singing
very,
over the top.
And that one also, that very influenced by just some like deep Susan Alcorn hanging.
She plays the pedal steel.
Think for that track, we were like, what sounds the most like the ocean of people we know? Who has the deepest, like,
and immense
and slightly terrifying? And like, Susan Alcorn, she has to come play this with Elizabeth sings.
And she's another proponent of deep listening.
Yeah. We're speaking with Anna and Elizabeth. Their most recent album is called The Invisible Comes to Us. And you want to play another song from the record? This one is called Black Eyed Susan. And for this one, Jarrett's going to pick up the saxophone. For Anna and Elizabeth, it's As You Were. Here's another solo performance in our soundcheck studio.
Thank you.
downs the fleet lay moored. She was waiting in the wind when black-eyed Susan came on board, saying, "Where shall I my true love find? Tell me, jovial sailors, tell me true, does my sweet William sail among your crew? Willie, who high upon the yard, rocked by the billows to and fro, soon as her well-known voice he heard, he sighed and cast his eyes below. The cords glide swiftly through his glowing hands, and quicker than lightning, and quicker than lightning, on the deck he stands. Oh, Susan, Susan, lovely dear, my vows will ever true remain. Let me kiss off those falling tears, we only part to meet again. Change as ye list, ye winds, my heart shall be the faithful compass that shall point to thee. What the landsmen say, they'll try to tempt thy constant mind. They'll say that sailors went away in every port a mistress find. Yes, yes, believe them when they tell thee so, for thou art present wheresoever I go. If to fair India's coast I sail, thine eyes are seen in diamonds bright. Thy breath is Africa's spicy gale, thy skin is ivory so white. The pleasant breezes, wheresoe'er they blow, they bring me memories of my lovely Sue. The boatswain gave the dreadful word, the sails their swelling bosom spread. No longer could she stay on board, she turned, she sighed, and hung her head. Her little boat, unwilling, rowed to land. Adieu, she cried. Adieu, she cried, and waved her lily hand.
Anna and Elizabeth with an arrangement of the folk song called Black-Eyed Susan. It appears on the album called The Invisible Comes to Us. Elizabeth, where is that song from?
Oh, that's a New England song.
Yeah, from a little town called Milton.
Yeah. Not a port town, then.
No, so. But the guy, Asa Davis, was definitely of Irish heritage.
I was going to say, there's pretty clearly British Isles, Irish English
yes,
roots
for sure.
to the song,
in fact,
to the melody.
He kind of sang in an Irish accent, even though I think his family had been in Vermont for a couple generations. But the songs kind of retained, like, an Irish accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sometimes they do.
But here's the thing. I mean, the two of you, you are not 19th century Americans tramping, tramping through the hills and hollers of Appalachia or the Adirondacks or whatever. You're modern 21st century musicians who live in New York City, and you know, your experience has to come into this as well. Is that
totally? And I think that's been like a puzzle,
And a big part of figuring out how to do this album, particularly.
I would say when we started the band, it was such this sense of like, oh, we need to start this project because we want people to know about these singers. And it was this idea of like, almost being like these weird journalists, like, oh, we found these stories, check them out. Part of the impetus for this record was to really say, like, I have heartache. Like, where does that fit in? Or like, you know, where does the fact that, you know, when we're driving on tour, we're listening to field recordings and the Dirty Three, where does that come in to the reality of like the sounds we get to play on stage? Because it felt for a second like we had these broad listening lives, and then we would just cut everything away and only present like this small part of the music that we listen to.
Well, you mentioned Dirty Three. Dirty Three drummer Jim White
is on that track, actually.
Taking a break from his Cretan folk music project with Siloris White. They've been here in the studio to sit in on a track or two on this new record.
Yeah, it was such a treat.
Women in general do not fare very well in
a lot of these songs. A lot of these songs. That's very accurate.
So, you know, it's one thing when a man sings these songs, you know, the women are kind of put upon, or they're forlorn, they're left at the harbor while Sweet William goes off with the ship. When a woman sings those songs, does a woman have more agency if it's coming from a woman's voice?
Depending on the song.
And I think it does change, even just for me as a listener, the way I hear what's being said.
Yeah.
And of course, we got that song from a man. Singer who
from
was
a
man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of our song choice is definitely feminist leaning, or this idea of like, oh, which stories, some of it's intentional, some of it's totally like, what song am I drawn to?
Right.
You know, especially that Janot song, which feels like such a, this image of this old woman being like being heartbroken, but also saying, I wish the world was peaceful. If I had the power to make the world a peaceful place, I would. And finding songs that have that kind of message, or some of the kind of more vague, less narrative songs, like the Ripest of Apples song, which feels just more a general, like, I'm heartbroken song that feels not ungendered, but you can kind of, I think, put your own self into it, regardless of how you identify.
Yeah,
I think so.
So the title of the album is so poetic that I hesitate to ask you to explain it to us.
Yeah.
But The Invisible Comes to Us suggests that there is something intangible and ineffable that you're able to reach by doing this kind of work.
Yeah, or glimpse at times, maybe.
There's
sometimes a feeling of something that's coming through to you, and that because we're working with things from the past, that it's always incomplete, an incomplete picture that we're glimpsing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just recently in London and stumbled on this exhibit at the British Library called 140 Years of Recorded Sound.
Wow.
And the earliest recording that they have that you can listen to is Brahms, Johannes Brahms. And he's like, he lived long enough that he was alive at the beginning of, and so all you hear and this voice screaming, and he's like, you know, like your dad talking into a Skype, you know, my this is Dr. Brahms. And then there follows some music, and we're told it's the Hungarian Rhapsody number 1, and I have to take their word for it, because all I hear is the white noise. And but still, it's like you're sitting there and you're going, oh my God, this is like 1889, and this is Brahms, and
I'm hearing his actual voice.
And it's like you were saying, Elizabeth, it's like you feel like you've time traveled somehow.
You have.
I think humans are so good at filling in a feeling, even when you're only given a hint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this album, the result of obviously a lot of time spent in archives.
Yeah.
You do see the sun occasionally, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes.
But how do you decide on the arrangements? How far that you'll go, you know, towards the avant-garde Pauline Oliveros fan?
Right.
Or, you know, how close you'll stay to the original?
We've been talking a lot about, that idea of balancing. And I think we return again and again and again to the idea of, like, how do we tell the story? What we're trying to do is move people through this set of stories, and some of the stories are scary, or like some there's moments in some of the stories or sounds where it's like, oh, disconcerting. But
the old weird America, as Greil Marcus put it.
But I think with this project, there's not a goal of like, let's alienate people because this is such a screwed up story. Like there's this deep awareness that we try to have of this sense of like, okay, well, we like start the set and it's warm. And we talk about like warm or dry versus dry, or like comforting versus like scary, or like this idea of balance. Because I do think we have this desire to bring people into the more challenging or spaces and try to figure out how to challenge people, because we love weird music and we love the weird of ballads. But I think even when we were just doing ballads and not really focusing or into experimental music as we are now, there is still that sense of like, we like folk music, but we like the weird folk music.
Yeah.
We're not even like, oh, we're going to sing like Keep on the Sunny Side. We're like, here's a ballad about a woman murdering her children in the forest.
And who will listen to these 8 unaccompanied verses?
So I feel like that's been a part of our process, is this idea of like, not that with the idea of creating a mass appeal at all, but this idea of like, how do you invite people into this space that can then get scary, but you like want to keep them there for a while and then kind of, I don't know. So I think this record is an extension of that idea of saying like what our audience might think of as a more avant-garde sound. Like, how do we balance that with this thing that comes after, or the thing that preceded it? We think a lot about like set order and the album order, thinking of like, oh, the Shore song, what balances that on the record, or like how, what leads into it? We think of this as like kind of a novel, or like here's these episodes that are all connected, and this one allows this one to get weirder. Or like I think in the context of this project, that's what we think about a lot.
How do people receive the various things that we're putting out?
Well, then they receive them as digital tracks, and all that sequencing work that you've done doesn't matter anyway. But I really love the fact that you did think of this as like a single kind of listening experience.
It's like when we first started doing the Farewell Aaron drone track, you hear the shifting in the audience. Like, people came and they wanted to hear us sing a bunch of folk songs, and now in the live show, the drone track is even longer, and it's just drone, and we're like, this is the ocean. And I just remember the first time we did that, it was at this folk show in Newcastle, in England. And it was like, you hear when the audience is like, what's happening? Like, you hear their bodies move.
I've been hearing one note for a minute.
And then this old, wonderful old man like came up to us after the show, and he was like, yeah, I didn't really know what was happening during that part. And then he was like, but you know what? Then I thought, the ocean is really big. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I think that's kind of what we're going for, is this like, what's happening? And then just like, oh, if you could like have one thought or image or realization, like, great, cool.
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned that song Farewell to Erin a couple of times. We'll hear a little bit of it when we wrap up. But first, you have another song to play for us, and it is not on the record.
It's actually a song we've played since the very beginning, but kind of as folk musicians, you kind of keep a lot of the songs around.
They're still good. Imagine that.
So Old Kimball, is this, who's part of this, the country is this from?
This is from southwestern Virginia, my old stomping grounds.
Yeah, from a singer named Texas Gladden, who's was recorded by Alan Lomax. And we've become friends with her family, and we're actually doing a project with her family, and we were there a few days ago, and her granddaughter told us that she was like had practiced singing by singing into a ball jar,
and like hearing the echo bounce back out of the glass.
Then we just like spent part of the morning like with the granddaughter of this ballad singer, and I was like
holding up jars.
She and Elizabeth were like singing into jars. I was like, it's a piece.
It's an performance
experimental
art.
Piece now. Yeah. So
new horizons.
All right. Well, no jars, just microphones for you today. Anna and Elizabeth performing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. The new album called The Invisible comes to us, but this precedes the album. It's a song called Old Kimball.
Old Kimball was gray neck and old Nelly was brown. Old Kimball beat old Nelly on the very first go round. And I see, and I see on the fourth day of July. His bridle made of silver, and his saddle made of gold, and the value of his harness, it has never been told. And I see, and I see, on the fourth day of July. I get up in my buggy with my line in my hand. Good morning, young lady. Good morning, young man. And I see on the fourth day of July. What makes women love men? Then look back and I wonder what makes men love them. And I see on the fourth day of July. They'll cause you hard labor. They'll cause you downfall. They'll cause you hard labor all behind the old brick wall. And I see on the fourth day of July.
Called Old Kimball, Anna and Elizabeth performing live here in the Soundcheck studio with Anna playing the banjo and Elizabeth doing a little, what do you call that? It's just
Hambone.
Hambone.
Hitting your legs.
Yeah. So you mentioned Alan Lomax, you know, who crisscrossed the country trying to record all of the folk music he could because the fear was that it was disappearing.
Totally.
That was...
pretty
70, 80 years ago.
Yeah.
Are there still places in America where you can go and hear this as a kind of a living tradition?
Yeah. It's a different landscape. It's just the way of life has changed for everyone over the last 70 years in America. But Well, I remember when I moved from New England to Southwest Virginia. I mean, Elizabeth could tell you, she grew up in it.
Right.
For me, it was like this, you know, I liked folk music. I watched Songcatcher. I all that junk, and went to the Carter Family Fold, which is where the Carter family was from. They have a venue, and you're waiting for the concert. There's this huge gap in between the stage and the first row of audience. And I, total outsider, was like, what's that for? And then the band starts, and then all these people start dancing. Hmm. Just total rocking, flat foot dancing, grannies, little kids, people my age, dancing, doing this step. Didn't know how to do it. But to me, Southwest Virginia and the dance music there is a really still a very living tradition. It's a place where the Fiddlers Convention might be organized by the fire department, mm-hmm. which to me is a cool sign that it's still a deep part of the culture.
Yeah. Is that Galax in that part of?
Yes. Yeah.
That's where the big folk fiddle
festival
is each
very big Fiddlers Convention.
Yeah.
Because you grew up going.
Yeah, totally. And my mom would be like, here's your little boots and go flat foot. And I would, kind of toddle along and watch other people's feet moving. And it's, I would say, I don't know, it seems, maybe this is the naivety of someone who's alive now and thinks about the past as a different place. But seems like you have to be a little more intentional about whether you are into that kind of thing or whether you're going to take your kid to a Fiddler's Convention versus, a sporting event or something else.
Well, fortunately, it's not an either or proposition. This has been great fun having you guys here with us.
Yeah, it's so great to be here.
Anna and Elizabeth, the album's called The Invisible Comes to Us. They've been playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Thanks again.
Oh, thanks. Thank you so much for having us.
That's going to do it for this episode of Soundcheck, taken from our archives. We actually shot video of this session, and you can see it on our website at newsounds.org. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time.